Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. This week's podcast is all about the new film, Celtic Soul. Sure you've worked out the obvious connection with the music this week. So the new movie Celtic Soul, which debuts at the GFT on the 26th of February as part of the Glasgow Film Festival, is a road trip for Irish journalist Eoin O'Callaghan and guest of this podcast Eoin O'Callaghan and Canadian comedian stroke actor Jay Baruchel. Eoin more than adequately explains everything about the film, so I'm going to leave that for him to do. If you know through the At the Min Celtic podcast that I was lucky enough to have a first of a seat in the Celtic director's box this week, and you want to know more about the tales from that, then you're a sadder man than me, but you can go to the At By The Min podcast and you'll hear all about how Remy and I were propositioned as I dropped him off at Central Station by our lady when she worked out that we weren't CID. Anyway, enough of that. Celtic are fabulous at the moment. If you listened to the podcast with St Anthony and Brian Wilson, you'll know that the Foundation are looking for volunteers for Wednesday night for the Wilfred Wish promotion. And if you want to get in touch with them, then you can do contact the Foundation, go online and speak to them. But enough of me, this is me, Harry Brady, with him, Eoin O'Callaghan, talking about Celtic Soul. So I'm joined now by Mr. Eoin O'Callaghan. So Eoin, do you want to introduce yourself and just make sure that I have pronounced your name correctly?
Yes, my name is Eoin O'Callaghan and I am a sports journalist and broadcaster, have been for a number of years now. I'm originally from Ireland and spent the majority of my life in Ireland working for RTE and Setanta and News Talk Radio and all those bits and pieces, and now residing in Toronto, gazing out blissfully at the sun setting over Lake Ontario at the moment.
Well, that's what I was going to do. One of the things when I'm speaking to guests who are not where I am here in Glasgow, I like to get a picture painted of what it's like. So what's the weather like? We've got, I think it was half a degree today here in Glasgow, so that's what we were, but a bit cloudy and a bit sunny at times. What's the weather like there?
It's bizarrely mild for January. We were kind of expecting, you know, usually you'd be dealing with kind of minus 10, minus 15 sort of temperatures, but it's just around zero, to be honest. It's really tropical, so a lot of people based locally don't really know what to be doing with themselves. Do they kind of brace themselves for what's about to come in February, or do they just kind of accept it and take it for what it is right now? So it's yeah, the sun is splitting the stones here right now. It could easily pass for a kind of a late summer's day, really.
Have you not got that dilemma? Do you not pack all your clothes away for the summer because you've got deep winter clothes that you've got to put out?
It's yeah, I mean, moving back over here, I lived here for 3 years previously, and we actually kept all of our winter clothes because they're really specific about it over here. You need to go to a certain shop to buy your winter coat, and you need to go to another certain shop to get your winter boots. So we just kept on to all of it. So coming back over here last year, it was just, okay, we'll just go to this part of our wardrobe and bring all of our Canada stuff back with us. So
before we can get on to the meat and bones of the podcast, I need to establish your credentials for being on a Celtic fans podcast. So first of all, what was your first Celtic game and who was your first Celtic hero?
Two easy questions. My first ever game was July 1994 when Celtic came to Bishopstown in Cork, where I'm from originally, and they played a pre-season friendly against Cork City. And I was in the stands with my older brother at Bishopstown that summer's evening, and Celtic won 3-2. And I remember it so well because it follows on to your next question, because my first Celtic hero was John Collins, who I had a poster of on my wall, and he scored that day against my hometown team. But walking home from the stadium later on that evening, I had to nip into Jury's Hotel because I was caught short, and I bumped into the entire Celtic squad who were staying there that evening, dressed in their blazers and their glad rags. And that night I got to shake John Collins' hand. So when I was an 8-year-old kid, it was my first Celtic game, but also that night I got to meet my hero for the first time.
He didn't, as he shook your hand, throw you to the ground and make you do press ups or sit ups?
only ten of them. So I got away lightly, I think, yeah.
So were you always a Celtic fan, or was it that game that inspired you to be a Celtic fan? What was the situation?
Well, I've been asked that a few times just while we've been doing promotional stuff for the film. And what I keep on saying is that there was never any kind of come to Jesus moment. You know, there was, you know, I think a lot of time people will say, was there a particular moment or a particular game? But, you know, I just remember, I think, obviously growing up, you were very aware that, you know, Pat Bonner was a Celtic goalkeeper, and so, you know, you were that was the first point of reference when you were maybe 6 or 7. You knew that Packy played for Celtic, and then, you know, from there I used to get Shoot magazine religiously every week. Well, actually my mum used to get it for me. Mm-hmm. That was just, that brought it onto a different level entirely, because that's where I got a poster of John Collins for the first time, and was able to stick that on my wall. And I just never remember thinking, who's this strange team, or who's this strange club, and who are these names? It was just, I just kind of felt a little bit natural. Like, there was never any kind of declaration that, oh, I'm a Celtic fan from now on or from this moment forward. But yeah, it would have been around that kind of 93 period that Celtic came to mean something a lot more. You know, it was difficult for me to watch them on TV, because at that stage, growing up in Ireland, we didn't actually have, in our family home, we didn't have access to UK channels, multi-channel, as we call it back home. Mm-hmm. So you know, the avenue into the world of Celtic was literally through catching up on reports and features that were in my favourite football magazine. So up until that moment in 94, when I got to see them live, it was almost kind of mythical. And then, you know, even when you're in the stands, it still retains that sense of kind of, you know, the grandeur somewhat magical. And then when you get to shake hands with a guy that's been on your bedroom wall for however many years before, it was just incredible. But it humanizes everything then. You know, it's like, you know, I've met this guy, and you know, he does exist, and this is the real world. And, you know, because when you're that age, everything just is on a different planet. And then maybe that actually kind of made it a much greater relationship, because you know, it was something tangible, and you kind of knew that Celtic wasn't this kind of mystical thing, and it was real life, and maybe that's what kind of you know, has always had it at the back of my mind so much.
So just to run the tingles down your spine and the goosebumps across your body, this was the awe-inspiring Celtic team that you saw that day. Marshall Smith, Boyd, McNally, Mackay, Grant, Galloway, McStay, Donnelly, Walker, Collins.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I actually remember, as an aside to that game, Paul Byrne, the Dubliner, he was on the books with Celtic for a while.
He came on as a sub for Galloway in that game.
He came off the bench, and it's as clear as the goal that Billy Wood scored that day for Cork City. It's just burned into my mind. Paul Byrne missed an absolute sitter, and obviously the game was being played in Cork, and Byrne is a hardcore Dubliner. So to miss a sitter when you're from Dublin playing in Cork for Glasgow Celtic, the crowd absolutely ate him up. So it was that was just, yeah, when you're going through the team, that was just another little thing that's just come into my mind now.
So how did your Celtic supporting and passion for football evolve over the next few years that you then became a journalist?
The first point on the road to being a journalist is that you quickly come to realize that you can't actually play the game to a decent level.
Yeah.
So all of your hopes and dreams of ever achieving professional stardom go out the window. So then you realize that, oh, well, actually I could just write about it and tell professionals how they should be doing their job. Over the next couple of years, it's funny. I mean, obviously, you know, I always had a love for the English language, and around that time, around that kind of mid-90s time, we got our first PC in our family home, and you kind of fasten on to the fact that there's a word processor on the computer, and I can type anything that I want on a screen, and I can save it, and I can come back to it later. And I just used to write match reports. And as I got a bit older, you were kind of able to dip your toe in the water of going to friends' houses and watching games and on Sky or you know, whatever other channels they had. And then I just file away all those memories and come back to the house and do a match report on the game. That was kind of my little hobby for a long time. And obviously that, you know, that fuels your sense of the encyclopedic stuff. You know, it's you know, when you're able to reference players and reference history and all that sort of stuff in terms of match report, and you can go into school and impress your friends with all these facts that you kind of have learned, all stolen from that week's Shoot magazine, you know, if we have to be honest here. And then, you know, all the way through kind of secondary school, by the time you get to 15, 16, you realize that if I play my cards right, maybe I could somehow make a career out of this. And, went to Dublin and went to study kind of media and the world of TV for 3 years in university. And all through that time, I mean, it's, football has always just been that thing that's been in my life. I remember we went through a phase back in Ireland where we have a TV station. We still do, Tina G or TG4 as it is now, which is in our native language. Essentially, it's every piece of programming is done Os Gaeilge. And for a brief period in the late 90s, Tina G used to broadcast SPL games. They whatever sort of broadcast partnership they got with ESPL, it enabled them to have this access, and it was absolutely fantastic to have your weekend kind of you had your Premier League stuff, but also you had an opportunity to watch Celtic, and obviously at that time they'd already won the championship under Wim Janssen, and obviously that competitive nature was really, really strongly back in Scottish football. And that dovetailed neatly with what I was trying to do on the side, which was kind of write and build up a bit of a profile and stuff. So there's obviously kind of standout memories, and when we're talking about that squad that I saw in July 94, obviously at the end of that season it was a Scottish Cup team as well, and that was a standout moment because of probably any listeners will probably see where I'm coming from in this, but you know, those simple days when any kind of foreign import was exotic, when you'd sign a player with a funny sounding name, it was just, oh, this guy's going to be incredible, just because you didn't know anything about him, and chances were he was going to be awful, but you always were so optimistic that he was going to be brilliant. And I just remember when Celtic signed Van Hooijdonk, and he goes and scores a winner in a cup final, and he's this Dutch guy, and it was just,
Celtic have signed a player from the Dutch leagues and he's a striker, so he must be brilliant.
Exactly. Just when you're 9 or 10 years old, like all of those names, obviously subsequent to that was the likes of George Cadet and Paolo Di Canio, and obviously football was just kind of heading in that direction when foreign imports were becoming a lot more regular. But for that initial time frame, it was, I still remember going through you know, going through team sheets and stuff and looking for different names, and I'm thinking, God, Theo Snelder's at Aberdeen. He's a Dutch guy. Like, what's he doing in Scotland? You know, it was just every little name that you kind of came upon was just, you know, it was amazing to think that it was so international. And then obviously within a couple of years, it was just taken for granted. But you know, also at that time, it was Tommy Byrne Celtic, you know, and it was.
That game against Cork might have been, if not the first game that Tommy Byrne had
one of his first games, I think. Yeah, I think so. Because I remember talking to one of the Cork City players, Billy Woods, who scored that day, and, you know, saying, geez, you know, I remember you scored that unbelievable goal. He said, you know what my biggest memory of that game is? He's like, what was that? And he was like, Charlie Nicholas's legs. So you know that was where he was coming from, but it was
an attractive way or a waxed way.
I didn't want to dwell on it for fear that I'd be surprised by the answer, but safe to say that you turn up in Cork in July and you've got tanned legs, you know, you obviously you know, you're cut from a different cloth. You know, it was a subtle message to the Cork lads that they were playing in the big leagues, I think. you're thinking back to you know, you used to have all those games at your mates where you try to remember lineups, you know, and I think you know, all those names like Marshall, you know, obviously you could go through it, Jackie McNamara, Tosh McKinley, Tommy Boy, Peter Grant, you know, Maestro obviously, Collins, Simon Donnelly, you know, all, like it's crazy how far it's been when you go back on it, and but just great memories. I mean, just great memories. Obviously, when Henrik arrived, and it was a championship finally under Wim Janssen, and you were very aware, I think, even at that stage, that the history of the club was just kind of awe inspiring. You know, it was you know, you were just, for whatever reason, you just felt that that when that championship win happened, it was transcending more than it was just not a piece of silverware, you know, and obviously you're watching it as a kid and trying to translate it and trying to like that kind of journalistic way, you're trying to understand it more, and those kind of moments are standouts, and it was a period obviously when, you know, there was more money kind of coming into the Scottish game, and it was fantastic to be like that on the cusp of your teenage years and still have this kind of magical relationship with a football club.
So were you an exception? You were talking about the difficulty of getting Scottish football. Were you an exception in your schoolmates that you were into Celtic? Was everybody else into the English Premiership? Was really starting to become what it is now around that time?
Yeah, it was in terms of the players involved. I mean, it was, you know, you would be doing well for your mates in school to be able to kind of to talk to you about the ins and outs of the Celtic team or who their favourite players were. I mean, obviously there was that kind of relationship, you know, that they would have felt, you know, towards Celtic, that they were, that was Celtic was their club anyway, no matter what. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't easy for us to catch much of the league. You know, if particularly for people who who like me, you know, you're just kind of you're relying on essentially for a lot of the time it was European highlights. You'd actually have more you'd have more of a chance to watch highlights from a UEFA Cup tie on Irish on an Irish national broadcaster than you would a kind of a league game, and obviously you'd get your chance to be updated on radio and stuff like that in terms of how the results went, but thankfully as the 90s progressed, it was a little bit easier to come and get some quality footage of the games and stuff, but yeah, for that kind of initial period it was tough, because I had that moment where I saw them play against my hometown team, and then I can't, you know, and then they just kind of disappear for a while until you can get to watch them maybe on a TV intermittently, maybe once or twice within the next calendar year. So it was a kind of a weird era, a weird time, obviously in comparison to now, where you can literally watch any game from around the world just at the click of a button.
So you've established your Celtic credentials for the podcast. That's very good of you. And you've established your passion for the club. So that then translates into why we've got you on your on the podcast. So do you want to explain why an Irish journalist living in Canada is on our podcast, and you touched on it when you said the film?
Yeah, so I lived in Canada originally between 2009 and 2012, and I used to present it at a TV show over here called Fox Soccer Report, and essentially it was this really cult TV show. It was produced in Canada, but it was broadcast throughout all of North America by Fox. By Fox Soccer Channel, and it went obviously through the US and into parts of Central America and the Caribbean as well. And it was a studio show. It was on for an hour every night of the week, and it was essentially Sky Sports News if it was for an hour, and it was just focused on football. So it brought you the news stories of the day, and then also highlights from every conceivable game around the world. Obviously, you'd focus on the high-profile leagues, but we had access and rights to so many other leagues, whether they be in Europe or whether they were in North America, like MLS, or into Mexico and stuff like that. You know, Copa Sudamericana, Copa Libertadores were big for our viewers and stuff. So, so I got this amazing gig in Canada when I was here, and it was always a boyhood dream to present a football show, and it was live every night, and it was an incredible experience from which to learn from. And it had, as I mentioned, it had this cult following. So if you were a soccer fan and found yourself living in North America, it was kind of this way of keeping in touch with everything that's happening around the world. Obviously, in the States, yeah, you can get your Premier League fix, and you know that's kind of pretty in your face right now, and was at the same time. But if you were a fan of South American football, or if you were a fan of the Bundesliga or the Eredivisie or Scottish Premier League, it also provided you with these highlights, and we'd cover stories, we'd do interviews and feature stories and stuff. So this is very long-winded, but unbeknownst to me, it was explained to me at the time, don't be surprised by the people who actually will watch your show. And I kind of said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, it could be actors, it could be people who work at the top end of sports administration in North America, it could be anybody. So I remember one morning waking up to an email, and it was from quite a high profile sports administrator based in the United States who was a fan of me and a fan of the show. Right. So I kind of rubber fastened the fact that, oh, this is a kind of a unique thing. So I finished on that show in 2012 because the show got cancelled by Fox, unfortunately. So I went back to Ireland with my missus, and I sat down at my kitchen table in Dublin, and I wanted to kind of put together a sports documentary, and I fleshed out this idea, and it was a kind of a historical look at Glasgow Celtic and its relationship with Canada as a country. And that was the kind of initial draft that I kind of put together on the computer, focusing on a lot of kind of the Joe Kenaway relationship and Gil Heron and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And there were obviously lots of early days Celtic players who subsequently emigrated to Canada and are buried in various parts of Canada and stuff like that. So that was the initial pitch. And running parallel to me working on this kind of documentary was this bizarre friendship that started between me and a Hollywood actor called Jay Baruchel. And I prefaced all of this by talking about the TV show, because the only reason that we were friends to begin with was because Jay watched Fox Soccer Report every night. Yeah. And we kind of hooked up this this relationship via social media. And I mentioned to him, oh, funny that, you know, I was aware that he was a Celtic fan. He posted some stuff on Twitter before him in a jersey and stuff. And I kind of filed it away in the back of my head. And we just got talking about Celtic over text message, and it quickly became apparent that he wasn't just a kind of a plastic fan. Like, he knew his stuff and he was very, very passionate. And I mentioned to him, oh, I'm kind of working on this documentary. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't really know about the narrative yet. I'm not very happy with it. And that was really the turning point. Myself and Jay had a Skype, and he revealed that his family were originally from the west coast of Ireland, and that they emigrated to North America in the 1840s. And that really was a massive moment for me, because suddenly you had, you know, Jay's kind of passion for Celtic on one hand, but also you had his ancestry and his awareness of his Irish ancestry on the other hand. So that was probably around early part of 2013. And now, in January of 2017, mm-hmm. We finally have, which is essentially the finished product. It's a film called Celtic Soul, and it's taken quite a while to figure out and put all the pieces together. But it's this little film that we're very proud of. It's a feature length kind of sports documentary, and it's a road trip between myself and Jay. And we start off in Montreal, and we effectively trace, on one hand, Jay's ancestry. So we head to the west coast of Ireland, and on the other hand, we're also tracing Jay's obsession with Glasgow Celtic. And so ultimately the finale is us getting to Glasgow and Jay to see Celtic play for the first time. So it was released in North America here. It had a limited theatrical run in November. And since then it's been absolutely chaotic. It's been at festivals all around North America, and it's playing on a premium cable channel here in Canada called Super Channel. It's so incredible to say this out loud. We have been accepted to the Glasgow Film Festival this year. So next month, on the 26th of February.
Sunday, the 26th of February at 4 p.m.
Yes, finally people in Glasgow who were so hospitable to us when we were there filming, finally they get to see this. And it's so exciting to get to bring them this film. And it's something we're very proud of, but we just hope that that anyone who goes and watches are entertained, and they have a laugh, and they might shed a tear or two as well, because it can get to you on occasion. It certainly wasn't what we set out to do. It just happened organically when you're shooting a documentary. It just sometimes things can kind of leave you with a bit of a lump in your throat. So it's a special little film, and we're very proud of it over here. So hopefully when it's playing in Glasgow, people might enjoy it.
So how do you, I mean, I know you said there that you sat down and you decided to make a film. But how do you sit down and decide to be, how do you actually get the mechanics around, we're going to make a film, you know, I've seen the trailer, read a bit about it, you've got a director, and, you know, if you've got this road trip, if you've got a road trip movie, how's it directed? Tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, it's firstly, you know, when you sit down and you draft an idea, like, firstly you need a story. You need the special ingredient that's the driving force behind it. But on top of that, you need various tricks to kind of keep an audience entertained and to keep their interest over the course of 90 minutes. So, I mean, it's very, very easy to sit down and you draft a documentary and it's filled with talking heads. But that can get repetitive. So you need to think about, right, well, how can we keep an audience on their toes, and how can we give them a variety of things to try and consume and get their head around? So a road trip obviously gives you the chance to visit different locations. So straight away, it was kind of unique, because I suppose we were so blessed in that we had Markham Street Films in Toronto, who were our production partners, and they guided this from beginning to end. And I mean, when it started off, this was just, I just wanted this to be Jay's thing. And I had an initial conversation with the guys in Toronto, and they said, have you given any thought to being in this yourself? And up to that point, that had never entered my thought. I just figured this is Jay's story, and it's his journey. And as soon as they said it, you could understand why they wanted this kind of partnership, for lack of a better term, because it's very, very difficult for one person over the course of 90 minutes it's so much work, and it's so much heavy lifting for one person to be that kind of, you know, intense about the subject, and over such a long period of time.
Obviously, there can sometimes be a contrived element to it, of this person, the obviously the camera, you know, just as my perception as a viewer from some of these types of documentaries, you've got a camera which is supposed to be unobtrusive, and this person's permanently articulating his thoughts out loud to this invisible camera crew.
Yeah,
you know, that can, I could see that being a challenge to them, make that interesting over a full hour and a bit.
Yeah, no, it's also, I mean, they were taking a gamble that, you know, when myself and Jay sat down in a car, that we could actually come up with some back and forth that was funny, and that was fresh, and that obviously didn't sound contrived. But thankfully, we had so many hours of material that the guys could mine, and they finally found probably about four jokes that were actually funny. so that was quite a relief.
Could I just say, one of the dilemmas I've got, because I was thinking, and by the time this people are listening to this, they'll know whether they did it or not. I was thinking of using the trailer as this is the podcast that's coming next. But your trailer's immediately got a certificate 18 stick joke in the first 5 seconds.
Jay tends to have some colourful ways of getting his point across, and we go through these kind of processes over here where the film is sent to somebody who gives it a rating and kind of puts an age on it in terms of audience. And I think it was in British Columbia, which is the province where Vancouver is, and I think it recorded 84 instances of coarse language, and the film is 84 minutes long, so
it's 1 minute.
Now, in saying that, and in our defense, none of it is mean-spirited. I think and also it's kind of quite concentrated. For instance, there's one sequence where we have to climb Croagh Patrick in Ireland, which is this massive mountain, and that lends itself to Jay swearing quite a lot. And also there's a moment where we both go and watch Cork take on Galway in a hurling game on the west coast of Ireland. Cork are my team, obviously. Cork end up not doing very well in the game, so there's also a sequence of me growing increasingly frustrated while I'm watching my team getting beaten. So there's a little bit of colourful language there as well. So it tends to be kind of contained, and some people have picked up on it. You know, you meet some people, and that's just how they converse, and it's how they kind of add colour to things. And it's none of it is point your finger at somebody and call them a silly name. It's more in terms of conversational use than anything else. But yes, certainly it is something that takes your breath away at just how frequent it is.
So how you plan this out, and obviously people need to see the film to get to see it. Sure. Was there an awful lot of logistical planning you had to do to make sure you talked about going to the game in Cork, and of course you get across to see a game at Celtic? Was there quite a bit of logistical planning to make sure it all runs smoothly?
Yeah, it was huge. And I mean, it was, you know, we had a small crew because these, you know, you in terms of the filming, and you asked that earlier on, you know, you want to keep the crew small because you have to stay mobile. So you're constantly traveling from place to place. And, you know, so we had one camera, you know, we had our DP, Mark Lamy, he's just a genius. And, you know, he had a little drone with him, and that gives these sweeping, beautiful shots of just some incredible scenery throughout the journey. But it was really, really strange, because obviously you have to liaise with high profile sports organizations, and you know, you're trying to sell them on this project. And obviously, with me being a sports journalist, you have experience of it being difficult to gain access, you know, difficult to arrange interviews, difficult to get through a door, and to get in front of somebody that you want to speak to. And obviously, that, you know, there's certain reasons for that. You know, major organizations are very protective these days of getting the message right. Mm-hmm. But I was absolutely floored by how supportive and how into it all of the organizations and all of the associations that we had to liaise with throughout this process. I mean, obviously, Celtic's role in this was absolutely incredible. You know, obviously, fans can see certain sequences in the trailer that kind of fills in the blanks in terms of the access that we got. But, you know, be it at Lennox Town or be it at Celtic Park itself, I mean, we just got to, you know, I said it before, it was like Christmas morning for me. You know, I can only imagine what it was like for Jay. And then, you know, elsewhere, I mean, we visited the Brayhead Clan in Glasgow, the ice hockey team, mm-hmm. and they were just incredibly hospitable. You know, in Ireland, obviously, you had the GAA. They took such great care of us in Galway. And then starting out, you know, the first sequence is us in Montreal, and getting this unprecedented access to the Bell Centre. Jay is a massive ice hockey fan, and we kind of draw these similarities between his favorite hockey team, which is the Montreal Canadiens, and we try and draw a little bit of a parallel between the Canadiens and Celtic in terms of their status within their respective sports, and, you know, that the history and the prestige plays a huge role in that, you know, their backgrounds and what they mean to a fabric of society, and that it kind of transcends the sport a lot of the time. So that worked a treat. But I mean, it was, you know, if you think about it, it was two continents, it was three countries, but everywhere we went, we were just so grateful that everyone was just willing to stop and talk. And, you know, there's this kind of weird moment where we're on a street in Westport on the west coast of Ireland, and Jay is tracing his ancestors, and we kind of get a lead on an address. And, you know, we just go to this number on a street, and Jay walks up to the door and knocks on it, and this man answers. And perfectly within his rights to tell us to F off, because there's a camera crew shoving a camera in his face. Mm-hmm. And he just turns out to be this most wonderful, warm, gentle man who's just willing to talk to us about everything and anything. And that was just a little snapshot as to the rest of the production. I mean, it was all like that. I mean, there was never any hint of someone being suspicious of what we wanted to achieve. I think that everyone kind of felt that they got an idea of what we were trying to what we were trying to say with regards to the film. So I think that they were just really happy to be on board.
So you got to Lennox Town and you got to Celtic Park. Was it a game against Inverness? Yes.
It was a 3-0 victory over Inverness last season and last February. So obviously, you know, again, you talk about, you know, producing a film and logistics and schedule. Obviously, when we get there, everyone's talking to us about, you have to, you know, why didn't you come over for a European game? It would have been incredible. And unfortunately, you just, you know, when you're piecing a calendar together, and yet, you know, you, it's about people's availability, and it's about when you can get access, and it just turned into this really tight window that we had, particularly with Jay, because he's an exceedingly busy guy, and it was an intense. Really, it was a week. I mean, Jay flew from Montreal to Dublin, and he came straight from the airport. Like he was jet lagged, but he went straight into filming, and that was really the next 8 days. And that was driving throughout Ireland, and then eventually driving to Scotland and getting to Glasgow. So it was really intense. It was Inverness, and it was. You know, it was a difficult kind of period for the club because, you know, you got the impression that Ronnie wasn't going to be in the job for much longer. And, you know, I remember the game was scoreless at halftime, and the team were booed off at halftime. And I'm just looking at Jay, he's looking at me going, Jesus Christ, imagine if our grand finale to our film is a fucking scoreless draw with Inverness. You know, so, I mean, that was, now you're always, you know, you kind of know how these games tend to play out, you know, Inverness, keep it tight for a half, maybe 60 odd minutes, and then finally you unlock it and you get a couple of goals. But there was that moment when the camera crew were kind of looking at me. I'm saying, listen, it'll be fine, trust us. So yeah, finally, I think Lee scored twice that day. So it was, ultimately we got the winning finale that we wanted. And no, it was incredible. I mean, Lennox Town was an absolute treat. I mean, you know, even the drive to get there, and it was so salubrious. You know, there's no Google Maps. You know, it's like, you know, you call someone, and it's like going to a birthday party when you're 7 or 8.
It is very difficult, you know, if you don't know where Lennox Town. I was actually going to say, did somebody from Celtic take you to Lennox Town? Because I live in Glasgow, and I would find it difficult to make my way. Well, I have made my way to Lennox Town, but the first time you're going, you're thinking, I must have taken the wrong turning because it can't be up.
Yeah, because I mean, it's great. You know, you get to Lennox Town, you get to the actual, you know, village, and but then from there, you know, it's okay. They said to drive straight for a mile and a bit, and then there's a kind of a turn in the road, and it's like it. Well, actually, it was familiar to me because that's just how Irish people give directions. you know, it was. But I mean, you're driving into the mountains, and it's just this. You know, we get there, and I remember getting out of the car, and I'm just looking around, and it's just, you know, it's just incredibly scenic. It's, and you kind of think of where a lot of other elite teams train these days, and you know, it's like Fort Knox. You know, you know, there's so much security. You know, a mile and a half away from the actual entrance, yeah. And they need to buzz you in and all this sort of stuff. But we just drove in, and they were expecting us, and they were just so delighted to see us, and getting to watch the guys train. And you know, for us, there's a few treats that I won't spoil, you know, that the audience might enjoy, that show us at Lennox Town. And it was, yeah, just an incredible few hours that we spent there. And we were just, yeah, incredibly hospitable. The club were so good to us. And then, the following day was Celtic Park. And that was even strange. I mean, I remember we were walking into the stadium, and we just get stopped outside the entrance, and it's one of the photographers, you know, hi guys, welcome to Celtic Park, you know, can I get your photograph please? you know we're looking at each other going, God, this is incredible. You know, we're just turning up to you know, to see a game. But it was, and again, there's a kind of a special sequence in the film of us when we arrive, and yeah, hopefully we get across just how excited we were at the time. But yeah, very, very special.
So, and hopefully I pronounced his name correct, it's Jay Baruchel, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Yeah. So, how is he such a big Celtic fan? Don't spoil too much in the film, obviously, but...
Firstly, I think Jay's got the personality where he is a history nerd, and also he's a sports nerd. So, he is very, very proud of his his ancestry to begin with. But mostly, I mean, in the course of this film, you know, he digs a little deeper into his Irish side, and you know, that immigrant story that feeds into Celtic, really. I mean, you know, what were these people leaving behind that made them get on a ship and that they didn't even know what was awaiting them, on the next time they faced dry land. And I think he grew acutely aware of how closely that reflected the Celtic story. And I mean, he obviously with the Irish influence, he had this kind of period, particularly in his teenage years. Obviously, he started playing computer games a lot, so Championship Manager and FIFA, and he had heard Celtic, but then suddenly, through the course of computer games, then he'd watch a game on TV, and it was really, really quick that he could kind of look at the historical significance of the club, and then obviously its sport significance, and just really dive into both things. And I think once he had his eureka moment, you know, he always tells stories about watching Henrik play, and you know, that because he took it to a different level. I mean, it was just such a joy to watch Henrik on a pitch, you know wearing these colors and wearing that crest. And I think that probably that era of success under O'Neill probably brought Jay's obsession to a greater level, because there was almost a bigger reason for him to delve into every facet of the club and try to learn as much about it as he could. He was just in LA doing promo for his he's in this sitcom on the Fox network, FX in the States, and the sitcom is called Man Seeking Woman. And I follow the Man Seeking Woman social media stuff, and I'm just scrolling through my Twitter on my phone, and I see this little tweet that's, you know, posted up there of all the gang, you know, at this swish, really glitzy, glamorous LA event to promo the new series of their show, and there's Jay in the middle of it wearing the Celtic away jersey. I just thought it was absolutely fantastic, because clearly you're in this company where someone just thinks you're wearing, you know, a black shirt, you know, with a crest on it, you know. Yep. Whereas, you know, for those who know it, they're like, that is just so cool. So I had to laugh when I saw that, and I sent them a message about it. I think it's like anything. I mean, you know, once, you know, a lot of fandom and team support now, particularly North America, like, they have this strange thing where you almost support an individual, you know, because trades happen so often. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a favorite player like a Shaq back in the day, or a Steve Nash, or, you know, whatever, maybe it's LeBron now. And, you know, you just support the team wherever that player is at a given time. So that longevity and that level of painstaking support that we're obviously all used to from back home, that's just something that's still, it's an expat thing in North America. It's still not quite embedded in the fabric of how to support the franchise over here yet. You know, obviously, yeah, you know.
I suppose as well, when you've got the possibility, certainly in their football, where you just, the term franchise just made me think this could be the other reason why you don't get too emotionally attached to a team, because they could leave your town.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, exactly. And it's happened a few, you know, most high profile. We did our show, our TV show from Winnipeg in Canada, and they had an NHL team, and, you know, because it's a smaller part of the country, the NHL team was the be all and end all of that community, and like that, it just one day just goes to, I think it was Phoenix, where the Winnipeg Jets went, and it became the Phoenix whatever. We were living in Winnipeg when the Jets came back, and that was just, you know, it was like that. You had grown men in the stands crying because of what it meant to have their team back in their local community. Obviously, when you grow up and you're in a sports mad city like a Boston, or you know, for instance, in a football context now, it would be a Seattle maybe. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it makes, you know, it's far more of a long-term relationship that you have with a Red Sox or if you're in Chicago, it's the Cubs or wherever it is. In a modern context, there is still over here that tendency to support an individual and then figure out the team afterwards. So I think Jay, he was really enamored by the historical weight that was attached with this team, and it wasn't just buying a shirt. It was buying an identity. It was buying something more than that. It was also kind of declaring yourself as a fan. I mean, it's not I remember when he was at Celtic Park, he just lost himself in the store. You know, he was looking at the retro jerseys and the year. And he's this would be from the Scottish Cup, but what from the 70s, and it was just, you're kind of watching a guy, and it was just so fantastic to watch this other person kind of just get so excited by what a club stands for, you know, because he's obviously had that all of his life with something like the Montreal Canadiens, and he got to kind of show that to me when I was in Montreal, and then hopefully when we were in Glasgow, it was a kind of a role reversal where you're watching this guy just continue to fill in the blanks a little bit in the story, and you know, obviously he had that moment where the Irish ancestry and that kind of side of the journey that we'd been on had opened his eyes to all of this, and then he was in Glasgow and we got to walk around the Gorbals and we kind of again had this moment where you're thinking about the people who came to this community. They didn't have anything in this community starting out, so what were they actually leaving behind them if this was an improvement? It's from start to finish, you're kind of hoping that that anyone who goes to see the film will pick up on those little bits and pieces, because obviously on one hand you have the sports fan who just will love the access that we get, you know, and how cool the sports stuff looks, and you know, when we're in Montreal or be it in Croke Park in Dublin, in looking into the GAA a little bit, or when we get to Glasgow, all that footage is obviously really cool, but there is that subtlety to the story as well, and that we're just equally proud of. It's quite organic, and it wasn't something that we really wanted to drive home. It was something that we just hoped would come through quite naturally, and I think we managed to do that, I think.
And you talk of Jay being lost in the store as he absorbs himself in the passion of Celtic that he's always had from afar, and he's able to touch and feel it. And I suppose that's one of the things that someone like me, who on Sunday will be able to leave my house at the very last second to get to the ground at just the right moment, because I'm in this routine of that's what I've done for the last 40 years of going to the football. You just have this routine that you're used to. Every so often you do need that check to remind you about why it's so special. And so, you know, that's possibly what I can imagine if Celtic fans come to watch your film might help reignite within them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always something special about, for me, it kind of worked both ways. You know, I got to show Jay, an Irish national sport of hurling, which obviously is a very close cousin to Shinty, and we're kind of trying to draw a link between his fascination with ice hockey and then this other game played with sticks that his ancestors would have been heavily involved with, and it was fantastic to be that person who can kind of open someone's eyes to a bigger picture, and it was fantastic. And also it wasn't in the movie because I really feel the need to mention it. We had this moment at Lennoxtown where we had watched the guys train in the morning, and we went inside to have a cup of tea or whatever and to keep warm, and we were just in a little office with a couple of members of the Celtic staff, and Peter Lawl randomly came into the office, and we proceeded to have this absolutely incredible conversation. It was incredible for me because obviously any chief executive with any club has difficult relationships, you know, over a period of time with supporters, and obviously there's that kind of push-pull. But I got to observe this moment where Peter Lawl and Jay just kind of had this conversation about him being an outsider to the Celtic story, and what it meant for him to be at Lennox Town. But Peter Lawl, just, he could easily have walked through that office, you know, gave us a customary glance, maybe a handshake, and off he goes doing his own business. But he felt the need to sit down there in the middle of his day and chat to two perfect strangers about why they were at the club. You know, what was their story? Why did they feel the need to come to Celtic? And why are you making a film about this? And you know, it was, and obviously we didn't film it. There was no cameras to kind of commit it to history. But I just felt it was a lovely moment. It was very, very natural, and it was, I just think it was a really nice reflection on the mood and the tone of the film. It was welcoming and it was inviting, and obviously, you know, when you're a sports journalist, you're always cynical, right? You know, you've been around a block and you know how it works. But there was, you know, for the vast majority of making this film, I was able to park that cynicism. I was able to enjoy it, and you know, people have asked me, you know, granted we can kind of understand what Jay kind of achieved in terms of his journey, but what have you achieved? And I just have always said to everybody that when you're a sports journalist and a broadcaster, it's always the negative that you tend to write about. It's always the doping scandal, or you know, it's the sex scandal, or it's the refereeing decisions, or it's the player that's kicking up a fuss that shouldn't be and should be towing the party line. And you focus on those kind of irritating stories, and it just opened my eyes to the reason why I wanted to do this to begin with. You know, it just reminded me of why I do what I do, and I think it, you know, like that, you know, you're talking about the routine of doing something over a period of time, and you get used to it and you just maybe take it for granted. And you know, it's like that, I think, for anyone who's immersed in sport to that degree. And you had these collection of individual incidents throughout the course of filming, and then you managed to join them all together and make this kind of film. And I think at the end of it, hopefully for anyone watching, they may be reminded why they started being a really, really passionate Celtic fan from day one, or a really passionate ice hockey fan from day one, or a really passionate fan of hurling from day one. Because I think it just is it's a warm story, and it kind of reminded me why I do it, and that there's a joy to it, and there's an excitement to it. And when you know, when you watch a team that excites you, you shouldn't feel ashamed by it. You should embrace it. And you know, when you have success, you should enjoy it, and you know, you should embrace the good times. And during the bad times, you know that the good times are going to be along soon enough. It's you know, it's cliched and it's probably schmaltzy a little bit, but maybe it's an age thing. Maybe you get older when that becomes okay. You go through a period when schmaltzy is the worst thing that you could possibly be. From start to finish, I mean, it was a real pleasure to be involved with it.
So it's one thing making a film. The next thing is you need people to watch it. It's been very well received, the film. If anybody does a Google of it, they'll see there's plenty of articles about it. So how did you manage to get some traction and people interested in it? And it's obviously been well received. How did you manage to promote it and get that going? How did you manage to get it at the GFT on the 26th of February?
Yeah, well, it's like, you obviously from a kind of a domestic perspective, you have Jay who's really funny and really incredibly highly regarded in Canada and North America generally, and also you kind of have a sports film that's got two young guys in it, and it's, I suppose it's quite marketable. But also, we found ourselves when we were doing the promo, particularly in Canada, you had this bizarre kind of situation where you were talking about stuff like immigrants. And, you know, people were sitting down to interview you and talking to you about immigrant stories and people coming to North America, like Jay's ancestors building a new life and us tracing their footsteps in reverse. And it was obviously at the time when you had a presidential election on, and you had you have the rise of the Brexit idiots in the UK, and you have the rise of the far right in France. And bizarrely, you had our tiny little film that we intended to make as a road trip with two buddies who share the same love for a football team. You kind of had this film be a little bit more representative of something bigger, you know, in terms of history, and that everybody comes from somewhere and that everything comes from somewhere. There's just no grand moment where it's an explosion and something happens out of thin air. There's, you know, a lot of North Americans still wouldn't be very familiar with the Celtic story and the origin story. So you're kind of this film was an eye opener for them. So I think maybe on another level, you kind of have this film that's a bit timely because, you know, Jay is delving into where he came from. You know, that's one angle to this film. And it's, you know, when you we're kind of existing in this bubble where outsiders and immigrants, they're kind of swear words and they're dirty terms. Yeah. And there's such a substantial part of portion of the world who just wants to treat any immigrant with distaste and suspicion. And, you know, maybe it touched a nerve with people going, hey, this maybe just goes a little bit beyond being a film about two boys heading off to Glasgow on a mad trip. And I certainly hope that as I mentioned, that the subtleties don't get lost on people. And I don't think they have been. I think that, you know, obviously from Glasgow's perspective as a film festival, you know, this is also a massive anniversary. 2017 is a massive anniversary for the country of Canada. So I think the Glasgow Film Festival were very keen on a sizable portion of their films to be from Canada to begin with. Obviously, there's a massive relationship that exists between the two countries. And also, I just think that it's... you know, as I mentioned, from a sports perspective, it's very, very common that a documentary would be made about something negative. You know, if you are getting funding for a sports documentary these days, it tends to be about maybe a notorious sports figure, maybe a notorious sports event. Those are the types of stories that tend to be financially backed, because yeah. It's maybe a little bit sexy, maybe a little bit dangerous. You kind of don't really tend to have a Celtic Soul type film just being put out there. It's a bit of a strange entity, and maybe the fact that it's a little bit unique and a little bit different has served itself well in trying to gain some traction. And obviously, I think that the Celtic fan base, I don't think that we could have expected anything less. You know, they from the word go, they've just been so supportive of this. And, you know, something as simple as I was at a film festival. I was at a film festival in Windsor, Ontario. We just kind of tested the waters a little bit, and we went to this small little festival, and it was the kind of the film's debut a little bit. We just wanted to gauge the crowd reaction, and we just had this absolutely beautiful screening. We actually had two screenings, and it was filled with expats. it was just filled with these people of all ages, you know, who had maybe immigrated from Northern Ireland, from Ireland itself, from Scotland, from different parts of the UK, and they had actually come because they felt this relationship with Jay's immigrant story, more so maybe than the glitz and glamour of Celtic and us going to Celtic Park. And then we had this amazing moment where we had this screening and people wanted to shake my hand and have a chat with me afterwards. And this tiny, tiny little woman came over to me. She was talking to my wife, and my wife kind of asked me to come over. And she introduced herself as the niece of Adam McLean, who played for Celtic in the 1920s.
Right.
And here's this moment where you just find yourself in this tiny part of the world in Windsor, Ontario, and yet there's just this massive, massive link to Celtic as a football club. You know, you have this personal thing that people have with this team and with this organization that just goes so far beyond people kicking a ball around a pitch. And it was just another reminder of it. You know, we had some people from whatever the nearest fan club was, supporters club, and they had their jerseys on for the screenings. We were in Whistler on the West Coast, and the Vancouver branch of the supporters sent up a handful of guys with their jerseys on for the screening we had at the Whistler Film Festival. So wherever we've gone with this, and hopefully it's a sign of things to come, the Celtic support has just been outrageous. We're you know, we're hoping to have an event with the Montreal. We hope to screen the film in Montreal soon. And I have to give a special shout out to the Joe Kennaway Supporters Association in Montreal, Dave Craig and all of his buddies up in Montreal. We arrived one morning to do some filming with them, and it was absolutely jaw-droppingly good, because you were just surrounded by these guys who, this was their thing. I mean, it was, yeah, and I have to tell this story because hopefully the hardcore fans would really appreciate this.
Uh-huh.
So the guys, it was a freezing morning in early February, and it must have been about 7 o'clock in the morning when we made our way to this meeting point, this kind of restaurant where the guys take up a back room, and that's where they watch the games. And they've got one of the lads has got a subscription, and they hook the laptop up to the screen, and they all gather around, have their breakfast, and they watch a Celtic game. And what I was amazed at was, obviously, we get talking to all the expats, and you know, it's fantastic. And but the tech wizard, who was actually, like, you know, doing all the fiddly bits involving the laptop and stuff, was this guy from Hungary. And he had the Celtic shirt on, and I was like, I know what all the other guys are doing here, but what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're a Hungarian guy. Like, what? And he tells this story about one Saturday, he came to this restaurant to have a bite to eat, and he could hear all this commotion coming from this back room. And he walked in, and he saw the TV screen, and he saw this team playing in green and white, and he presumed, he thought it was Ferencvaros playing, which I absolutely loved. And the closer he gets to the screen, he realizes it's not Ferencvaros at all, but it's actually Celtic. And he said, I just looked around this room at this massive, passionate group of men who were all the similar age that I was, and it was just so infectious. And he said, I've been back every week since. And I just felt that this story was so, so incredible, that you had a Hungarian guy who has his own ties to his own club back, yep, in Budapest, and he was overcome by this infectious love and deep-rooted passion for a team in Scotland, and that was however many years ago. And he, I mean, you were watching everyone have their breakfast watching whatever game it was, and he is the most passionate guy. He's jumping around, he's swearing at a misplaced pass, he's kicking every ball, he's heading every ball, and it was just this other beautiful little moment that we had during filming, because ultimately you had a crew with you, and you know, obviously you're explaining to the crew what we can experience here and what we're about to experience, but until such time as they started to experience it themselves, they weren't going to relate to it the same way. And this was essentially day one of filming in Montreal, and this is what they were getting. And it was fantastic for them. It was fantastic for us to be exposed to it. So I just wanted to mention the lads in Montreal who were just absolutely phenomenal to deal with from day one.
Well, you've got the lads in Montreal, and you've got the supporters here in Glasgow and people that you met. So it's on at the GFT on Sunday the 26th. Are you managing to come across for that, or are you leaving it like a baby, sending it off on its own to tour the world?
Well, I suppose you have to cut the cord at some stage, but if ever there was anywhere in the world that I would want to watch this film, it would be Glasgow, and I'm trying to make it work. I'm trying to be in a position where I'll get over. It promises to just be absolutely incredible. I've got a couple of family members who are going to fly over and be there, so that's an added incentive for me to try and get across. I've lost count of how many people here and in the UK have just sent messages saying, when is this playing in the UK, you know, like, when is it going to get over there? Because I think everyone felt that if we got the opportunity to show it in Glasgow, the reception would just be outrageous. And also, I just felt indebted to the city to begin with, because everyone we met along the way was just absolutely so great to deal with. And it's just fantastic for anyone who we met along the way or chatted to in a bar or actually featuring it themselves. It's just lovely to be able to tell them that you know, it's getting its international premiere no less than in Glasgow on the 26th. So here's hoping that it'll be a big crowd and we'll have a great night as well.
Well, if you can get across, because the day before Celtic play Hamilton, so you can get a Celtic game in and international premiere of your own film.
I'm very aware of the fact that there is a home fixture on the Saturday, as a little bit of research has already told me that. So it's becoming increasingly sizable dilemma, but a good dilemma. But if I can make it work, and if we can do everything that we need to do to get it to work, well then it's a bit of a no-brainer. And I'm just so excited. We kind of knew for a little while that it had been accepted, and then we just had to wait for the official festival list to be officially released before we could tell everybody. So it's just great that the news is out there now, and we can drum up a bit of support for it.
Okay. Any other places where you said at the beginning, but just to remind people, other places where they might be able to see the film?
Yeah, well, it's currently showing on a premium cable channel here in Canada called Super Channel. So if there are any Canadians listening to us...
there are, just to let you know, in terms of our podcast downloads, it's the UK, America, Canada, Australia, Ireland. That's the percentage of
that's absolutely incredible.
Our downloads, and in fact, just on a completely random, apropos nothing, North Dakota became the last state of the United States of America to have a download of the Celtic Underground podcast in about September of last year.
Well done, North Dakota. but no, it's. it's gonna be fantastic if we manage to get over to it. But it's a super channel here in Canada right now, and that runs until June. So if anyone out there has Super Channel or wants to get the channel so that they can watch Celtic Soul, they can do so until June. So they've got another few months, and then there's a couple of other festivals that it's been accepted to that I can't officially reveal as of yet, definitely there are other North American cities that Celtic Soul will be playing at.
Website does say the Kingston Canadian Film Festival.
Kingston, we can reveal Kingston, Ontario. We can reveal Kingston. There are some notable U.S. cities that it has been accepted to as well, that we can reveal in due course, but also very, very exciting news. And then once you kind of get through the summer, we would probably be looking at some terrestrial TV deals in North America and in the UK as well. And failing that, if we can get an international streaming deal, well, that would be fantastic as well. Obviously, so many people now, you know, consume TV shows just through streaming, be it Netflix or be it Amazon Prime or whatever it is. So there may be some opportunities there that we can explore. It's fantastic that momentum continues with this. It's still very, very odd feeling when you get people getting in touch with you or saying nice things about it. It's weird because you kind of know where this started off, which was a very fanciful idea at my kitchen table in Dublin a couple of years ago, and a lot has changed since then, and all of it has been positive.
Well, you've got your film that coincides with the 150th anniversary of Canada, coincides with the year of the 50th anniversary of Celtic, yes, winning the European Cup.
Yes,
so you've managed to time things quite well for a kitchen table discussion 5 years ago.
Yeah, and we had, and again, this was a fantastic occasion. We had a premiere in Toronto when it played at a cinema here, and it kind of ran for a limited time here as well. And we had a Q&A afterwards. And you know these people exist in the world. They're you know, the Celtic community just is just so widespread. And this gentleman got up from his seat and walked over to the microphone, and he said to us exactly what you've said there. You know, he just reiterated that, you know it's 1967, and you know we're going to have some major celebrations, and obviously there's a massive meet every year in Las Vegas,
yep,
for the supporters associations. So I think that we've been officially invited to head to Las Vegas this year with the film, and to show that to all of those fans who gather so religiously in the middle of a massive casino in the Nevada desert every year. If we can again make that work and get however many thousands of Celtic supporters attend that every year, well, that would absolutely be incredible. But not to bore anyone, but it's the outpouring of support from the wider Celtic community has been absolutely just top drawer, and it continues to be that way. And you know, I just know that wherever the film plays, it could be it's playing in Barcelona next month at a really, really cool film festival there, and I just know that in Barcelona you're gonna have fellas turn up dressed in their jerseys and showing their support, because that's just the type of person that this film tends to attract, and it's no matter where it goes, it's gonna have this unrivaled level of passionate support. So absolutely humbled by everybody just being so nice about it.
Well, as you say, it's showing at the Glasgow Film Festival, which is taking place in the 15th to the 26th of February. It's on Sunday the 26th of February at the GFT. Most people will know where that is. It's in Rose Street, just off Socky Hall Street as you go into Garnet Hill. And you may or may not be there, but it sounds like you're more likely to be there than not.
Well, yes, it's certainly edging in that direction, shall we say. So, yeah, fingers crossed we'll be able to be there and meet a few people.
Okay, well, with that, I will say, Owen O'Callaghan, thanks very much, and good luck to Celtic Soul.
Listen, thank you so much for all the support, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
No problem. Road tripping with my two favourite allies, pulling loaded, we got snacks and supplies. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. I thought Owen was an excellent guest, and we'll no doubt get him on again if he does manage to make it across for the showing at the GFT. We'll have a wee bit of an interview with him and a wee bit of audio from that, no doubt. Anyway, enough of me. There'll be more podcasts along soon, as there will be more victories from Celtic, getting closer and closer to the March 12th league-winning game. But I'll leave you with more music. And me, Harry Brady, saying thanks for downloading, listening. If you want to get in contact, you can email us, podcasts@celticunderground.net. That's podcasts@celticunderground.net. You can find us in all sorts of places. Rate us on iTunes. You can find me, Harry Brady, @HarryBradyCU on Twitter. This @CelticRumours. This @Stephen4_2. This @LackeyMore1. This @MarcoCooper. This @HullBoy. @many others. And I'll just leave you with good night and God bless. Just a good night. For the sun. These smiling eyes are just a mirror for. Just a mirror for the sun.